This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. Take Command Podcast. Logan Paulson there. Craig Hoffman here. NFL draft over. We did it, Logan. We survived yet another draft season, filling people's brains with knowledge of players that we'll see on other teams, and five that we'll see on the Commanders.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was talking to Dan Quinn. We did an interview with him on the Command Center show. It's on the Command Center's YouTube page. You could check it out. One of the things he said was, like, everyone's like, this is a lot of work for very little payoff. You know, you watch 300 guys. You know, obviously the director of college scouting is probably watching closer to 500 guys. And you take five people. So it's like a 1 to 100 ratio in some cases. And he said, I don't look at it that way. I look at this as the best way to learn the league, which I thought was a really insightful thing. And I kind of now I'm like, okay, you know, now you kind of get the landscape of where these guys are going, what they are. And when they hit free agency, you have some file on them. Yep. So I think it's, again, it's a lot of work, a lot of prep, but I do think there is a benefit outside of just the draft. And I think when you have a coach that's bringing that to your attention, obviously, it's important because, like, that shows you how locked in the whole staff is and how locked in they will be moving forward when they're looking for people that can bring in.
100%. I felt that this year in a way that was different for me. Not that people care about my or your, I mean, they care about your draft process. I don't know how many people care about mine, but just 30 seconds. Like, I feel like I had a more of a file on more guys this year than any draft I've ever covered. And I think it's in part because there's never been more possibilities for the team that, sure, I covered to take certain players at 29. I mean, we probably studied like 20, 25 guys in depth for the 29th pick, and Josh Connerly wasn't even really one of them. And then they took him. So then you do your crash course on Connerly. Like, I had a small file on Connerly, but then you go watch him and do some more research. But I do feel like, you know, guys go off the board here, guys go off the board there, and you're like, oh, I get that, or I don't get that. You understand how they fit in certain places because you have that deeper file. And just like you said, that will help when we preview games this year, like, oh, watch out for the rookie here because we know that he does this well, and we can see how it plays out. But also then, you know, 3-4 years from now in free agency, when these guys hit and become available, you do have some level of file. And, you know, for the staffs that go through that year over year, it does help, obviously, in the future. All right. With that said, how'd they do? Let's start off there. Before we dive into, like, who these guys are, when you look at the Commanders, the how'd they do question is close to the what grade do you give them question. And I am team, I hate draft grades because we don't know until 5 years from now. But if you look at kind of what we hoped they would get out of it and what they did get out of it, how do you feel about how they approach this draft and any major kind of storylines that stick out to you, positive, negative, neutral?
Well, I got to give our guy Jeremy Green a shout out. You know, I was talking to him last night a little bit, kind of texting back and forth.
He's about still what he awake. About.
I mean, I don't think that guy sleeps. You know what I mean?
He's about to enter hibernation.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And we were talking about Connerly and, you know, how much we liked him and how much he liked him. And, you know, he brought up something that I thought was really interesting. It's like, you know, when you look at the offensive linemen, obviously there was four kind of top kind of like first round tackles, let's say, guys that you'd give a first round grade to. And then after Connerly, there weren't any, right? It kind of becomes a little bit land of the Wild West. And, you know, Arian Tierce's in there. There's some other guys that kind of fall in that mix, but nobody you feel as good about as those top four guys. So in some ways, like, that tackle pick is better because you kind of look at it and you say, oh my gosh, like, they still got a tier, like a first round tackle. So for me, that's like a tier three player, like, kind of should be a first round player, but kind of heading into the second round.
Yeah, that first-second grade.
Yeah, correct. And I think that was like really good insight by him. You know, like, that piece, that position becomes more valuable because you're still kind of residing in that first round range, as opposed to edge, for example, which, as the NFL showed us in the draft, like, was kind of full of second round players. Like, I think everyone kind of had circled Donovan Ezeraku and Mike Green and some of these other guys. But if you look at it, like they were firmly second round players. It wasn't like they were top of the second. They were like 5 to 6, 7 picks in. So I think that's, again, a really interesting perspective on that tackle selection. And then I think when you look at how they handled the cornerback thing, like I remember on draft night when we were kind of going through the picks and I'm crossing off my big board and kind of saying, who's available? What would I do here? And it's kind of between Trey Amos, Landon Jackson, and I forget who the other player was, but there was two other players, Siobhan Revelle maybe, and then there was a safety or something. And I was like, the best player of this group, in my opinion, or the player with the least amount of questions is Trey Amos. And I felt like they just kind of went down the board and were like, these are the available players. Like Josh Connerly is a first-round player for us. He kind of falls in this tier. He's the best. And again, like when you look, when I looked at my sheet, it was like, oh, he's the best player available. Like for me even, you know, and I'm not, I'm not in the room with them. And you go down to Trey Amos and it's kind of the same thing. And I think for those first two picks, like just being so process driven was fantastic. And then you get to their kind of later round picks, you know, your Jalen Lanes, your Kane Modernos, your, what's his name? Jackson. Is that how you say it?
Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt.
Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt.
Hey, look, his nickname's Bill. And Ja'Cory, we're going to call you Bill because apparently that's what everybody calls you. And then, you know, we're going to get his name correct. The hyphenated Kroski Merritt and all. But we can just call him Bill.
Yeah. And I look at those players and we've talked about them a little bit offline and they are just good ball players, right?
Yeah.
They're competitive, they're tough, they're smart. And we'll talk about them more specifically, but I just, when they picked Lane, I think I texted you and I was like, dude, I like this player quite a bit.
Pumped. And then, not as pumped as you were for Medrano, but.
Yeah, we'll talk about him more in a second. But I just think you go down the list and you're like, good football player that adds value right now. Kane Moderno, good player that adds value right now. And then Kroski Merritt, like he is an interesting guy because he didn't play last year. He played one game last year. But if you watch him at New Mexico, like, he has all of these kind of like running back traits. Now he's a seventh round pick. He's just above kind of being a UDFA, but I think he's extremely talented. And so I like the ability that they showed in the first round to be extremely disciplined and find the best player. And I think they all kind of fit a certain level of need, which is great. And then when you get to the second round, to find these pieces that are just like, they feel like they're going to make your football team is the way I would say it. And like, when you look at other people's drafts, I don't always feel that way. You know what I mean? I'm not always like, oh, like this, there's no way this guy makes this team because they have this person here. He's going to be on the practice squad. This feels like kind of a wasted pick. I feel like these three guys, and I'm not just saying this, like this is supported in my evaluation. Like Kane Moderno was a top 100 player for me, you know? So for him to be there, for them to get him in the sixth round, the role, the special teams value, all that stuff. I feel that way about all three of those guys.
Definitely. Like they had five picks. They had to use them smartly. They had to use guys in, that were going to make the team. But I think we were talking about this on the phone yesterday. Like, I think these guys not only make it in 2025, I think these guys are on the team in 2026, 2027. Like that is rare in a draft class. And of course it could go sideways because of course it could. Every team is thinking, oh, we just took somewhere between 4 and 11 dudes that are going to make the team and be here in the long term. And you know, there's probably teams that are like, even if this guy doesn't make it in 2025, he's going to be on our practice squad and he's going to start for us in by 2027. Like there are teams that think that way, or at the very least you're like, hey, he's going to be a special teamer for us for a couple years on his rookie contract, whatever the version of that is. But I think Washington did a really good job of attacking really talented players with both high upside but also usefulness in the immediacy. And Lance Newmark said that Jalen Lane was also the best player on their board. Now, the best player on the board becomes less critical, less scientific, less whatever the farther down you go. Obviously, like there's going to be way more variance on who the best player is on every team's board the farther you go. But for them, it was an obvious thing. And I think in part because, one, we know they wanted to add some speed to that offense. They wanted to add some burst, some pop. But like he's got a use right now. And that's the other thing that Lance said that I liked a lot is they have plans for all of these guys. Like, I think Jalen Lane is going to be their punt returner and possibly their kick returner in 2025. And then they'll see what he can do on offense. Obviously, Kane Medrano is going to be a special teams guy with his athleticism. And then, you know, could he play more coverage linebacker in certain situations because his coverage skills are so unique? A guy that used to be an offensive player. Like, could you teach him some stuff in third down situations and have him be out there? Like, it's a big role for a rookie, but like maybe. And then, you know, we'll see what Kroski Merritt's role is, but I think he could be a kick returner, or he could obviously be just a running back who you give the ball to and let him be the runner that mm-hmm. he is. So I think that's the other thing that's impressive about the five, Logan, is they have battle plans for these guys. And it just shows, again, a prepared organization that is thoughtful and not just kind of throwing darts at talented athletes, even if all of these guys are extremely athletically gifted in one way, another, or in Kay Medrano's case, all of them.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, Jalen Lane is a good example of this. Like, you know, prior to that pick, I think it was like, there was like a pick, like a rash of like four edge rushers directly in a row. I'm trying to remember exactly who they were, but it was all guys that I was really high on. I thought, oh man, this is going to be the edge. And, you know, and then I think the Colts drafted a tackle, and then obviously the Washington Commanders draft Jalen Lane. And I liked all those players. I think I texted you. I like, man, I love players. It was like 121 to 125 or 27. I don't remember exactly the
I think range, it was, yeah, the Lane was 128. It was 121 to 127 that you were like, dang. 121 was David Walker from Central Arkansas. Lathan Ronsom, safety from Ohio State, who they visited with a couple of times, was 122. And then you got the next three picks were edges. Jack Sawyer, Baron Scroell, and Kyle Kennard. Dylan Sampson, the running back from Tennessee, was 126. And then your guy, Jalen Travis, was the Iowa State tackle who went to the Colts at 127, all right before Lane at 128.
And I have no inside baseball on this, but I'm sure some of those guys were on the board, right? Yeah. And I'm sure that they were in a similar tier to Jalen Lane, and they kind of fit a more acute need, obviously. And I think the thing that stuck out to me is, like, we've covered teams in the past where it feels like they've made panic picks. You know, it's like, oh shoot, our guy's off the board. Like, what direction do we go? Like, who do we select? And they've made, quite frankly, bad decisions. And I felt like watching through that, like, that would have tripped up another organization, that would have tripped up a team that was less prepared. And for them to be able to, like, oh yeah, Jalen Lane. And I think I told you this, like, he was a guy that I was watching another player from Virginia Tech, and he just consistently popped in terms of his competitiveness at the catch point, his vertical speed. And that offense in Virginia Tech is terrible. Like, it's like this weird kind of like run and shoot RPO hybrid, but like they take these deep play action shots on the field. And for him to find a way to like show up as a blocker, to show up and making explosive plays, I thought was really fantastic. So when he says he's a good football player, like, there's no doubt in my mind. And then when you go back, like you said, and you watch his highlights, you see a guy who has the ability to create after the catch, has some good contact balance, and can return kicks. And so it just, it could have gone sideways really quick there, I think. Yeah. If you're like, man, we have to get an edge at 128. We have to. Like, just to effortlessly pivot and be like, no, we're okay. Like, this is the best player on our board, or this is the player we value right here. And he has a skill set that, like you said, is going to see the field. I thought, again, it just showed great composure by the staff and great preparation, in my opinion. And we talked about it with Connerly. We talked about it with Amos. Like, the way the board fell was a little bit dicey, in my opinion. And you could have made a weird decision, but they just kind of were like, all right, we trust our board. We trust that game that we played in the weeks leading up, where it's like, if it's this player and it's this player. And we just got on base. And I just really appreciated that. And I just thought, you know, that fourth round pick was really interesting because of the landscape leading into it.
Yeah. Although I will say this, Lance Newmark afterwards said entering day three, Lane was their number one player.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Every team always says that. What are they going to say? Oh, no, he was the fifth player on our board when we drafted, but we passed up the four other guys because, like, what would make sense to complete that sentence? Absolutely not. I mean, I guess it was a position of need. Okay, whatever. But, like, maybe those edges weren't ahead of Jalen Lane totally on the fine. Board. But I do think it's worth mentioning. This is one thing I did want to talk about. The one, I don't call it downside, negative. I'll call it a negative, but, like, not that they did a bad job, which will make sense in a second. I'll just say the thing, Craig. They didn't have flexibility to move in this draft. No. And so the one downside to kind of having the five picks is they had the five picks, and there was no way to trade up if a run on a position happened. And so they have this run where from 121 David Walker to 125 Kyle Kennard, there's five picks and four of them are edges. And if David Walker comes off the board, most teams would go, oh God, here we go. If they really, really, really wanted an edge, and they would say, let's go flip a fifth or flip a sixth to move up three or four spots, or even let's flip a future fifth to move up. Commanders have five this year, five next year. They couldn't do that. And so I believe them when they say Jalen Lane was the best player on their board and that run on edges that they didn't really care about. But it is worth saying that they didn't really have the optionality once that run started. So they were a little bit boxed in. But I actually don't know how much it affected their draft based off their board. And certainly, you know, they're telling us it didn't. And I guess it's up to all of us whether we believe them or not.
Yeah. And again, like, I think when you look at Jalen Lane and you look at what he does and how he's going to be at the NFL level, like, I'm very confident. Like, he's one of those guys you watch and you're like, man, you're just going to be a good pro. You know, I don't know if you're not going to be a first or second or maybe even a third round pick. And obviously he gets picked in the fourth, but like, you just are a very high floor with a high ceiling kind of prospect. And if you look at the way they went, you know, with the first two picks, like, that's exactly what those guys are, high floor. And there's some potential there to be high ceiling players as well. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he was the number one player on their board. It wouldn't surprise me in the least because he is that talented. But I do think, like, it's important to note, like, edge was kind of this position that at least the media identified as something that they wanted to, that the media felt that the Commanders should address. Here's this run of players that I think are pretty gosh darn good. You know, I know they met with Kennard at the combine. I know they had David Walker in for a 30 visit, and they met with him at the combine, and they met with him at the Senior Bowl. Sorrell was one of those kind of sneaky athletic. I think he almost had a 10 RIS kind of grade, and he was just hyper productive at the Senior Bowl. He was hyper productive in college, just like, you know what I mean, just like a really good football player. And I'm not saying they would have picked him, but I am saying, like, there was some kind of, what is that, like, tier 6-7 talent there that could have been pretty devastating. Like, they could have gone in that direction had they chosen to, but obviously, like, I think Jalen Lane's a heck of a football player, and I love the value that he adds, like, right now as a return man, as your fourth receiver potentially, and he's got to compete for it, obviously. But he's athletic, man. He ran a 4.3 40. He's got an 11-foot broad jump. You see him catch the football well, and he's this competitive runner with the football in his hands. And I talked to Jeremy about this a little bit yesterday too. Yeah. He's like, he's kind of like Deebo Samuel Light, and when you watch his film, that does come across a little bit, right?
For
kind
sure.
of this. Pseudo, he's not a running back necessarily, but he's got the kind of contact balance of a running back. So I think it could be pretty cool in this offense where they try to create these space plays for the receivers.
For sure. We'll double click on that in a second. Let's go through all these guys. We'll start with Trey Amos, the second round pick. We obviously talked about Connerly already. So if you missed that episode, check it out. But there's our big picture look at it. Now let's get into some of the details, starting with Trey Amos here on Take Command.